the distribution of intelligence in society is fairly even regardless of socioeconomic circumstances. The distribution of educational resources at the primary and secondary school levels in British Columbia is relatively good, albeit unevenly shared. Access to post-secondary education, however, is anything but even, and in most circumstances, the difference is money. So what if money wasn't an object? What if industrious students with drive and determination could find the money and get to university? These are questions Ryan Beatty pondered as he looked at the lost opportunity for students and for society as a whole when bright minds are denied a post-secondary education. Ryan decided to do something about it. He created Luminaries, a scholarship program designed to fund the post-secondary education of students of potential who are facing financial adversity. Now, in addition to funding, Ryan went three or four steps further by engaging mentors who will support and encourage recipients. And he worked with employers to find summer employment for the luminaries, and he created an ongoing network of luminaries, mentors, and business leaders. We invited Ryan Beatty to join us for a conversation that matters about ensuring promising young women and men can reach their full potential and why that is important to all of us.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Ryan Beatty, welcome.
Thank you.
You have started or created Beatty Luminaries, which is an extraordinary program. First of all, describe what it is, and then let's talk about what it was that motivated you to do this, because it's incredibly generous, and I think it's an important contribution.
The main motivation behind it was to give access to post-secondary education to students who may not otherwise have that access, those who are from difficult financial backgrounds or facing adversity in financial or otherwise. And, you know, I've been thinking about it for some time. My 50th birthday was coming up. What can I do that was going to leave a mark and impact many lives and generationally could have a huge impact beyond just the first cohort or the few thereafter? So we're really delighted how it's gone so far, really excited with the progress we've made. But the motivation behind it, again, was to help these students. I grew up in an environment where I didn't have to worry about the cost of education. I went to school, I worked and all the things, but it was a middle class upbringing that, and I had a lot of friends and people in my neighborhood who struggled financially. And this is a barrier that I've seen over the years, that people who have not had the same access as others. I thought, well, let's try and make a difference here. So we came up with the idea a few years ago, talked to a lot of people. Do you think this is a good idea? What are your thoughts? A lot of people in the education space and everyone pretty much said this is a great idea.
Well, it is a great idea, but this is not an undertaking that is easy to do, because you've dedicated a lot of money to this. What is the fund that you have set aside to support this, and what's the long-term goal?
47, 48, I was looking ahead thinking, okay, it's my 50th birthday. What do I want to do? I knew, again, it was going to be something to do with the students. In the past, we've invested in various student initiatives, including the Beatty School at SFU, and I right. knew from talking to students, and when they come up to you and they tell you face to face the impact that the investments you've made have had on them, I knew that I wanted more of that feeling and more of that impact. So I think I was around 48 when I came up with it, thinking, okay, turning 50, how about a $50 million pledge or $50 million fund, which could last, in theory, could last in perpetuity. I'll get back to that in a minute, but I like the idea of $50 million. So we pledged that on my birthday last November, made a contribution of $10 million with a further $40 million to come.
And so that goes into this foundation that is then designed to give away scholarships each year.
Yes.
Your initial group, of course, on the theme of 50 was that you were going to give away 50 scholarships. What happened? How come you didn't do 50? And I'm not saying that you didn't do 50, like not enough. You did more than 50. How come?
There were so many applications, more than I would have imagined, given how new the program was. So many compelling stories. You read these stories, and they're so moving. And I said to Martina Makova, our executive director, we can't just stop at 50 because it's some arbitrary number that sounds good. We need to, the number, it's going to almost tell us itself. Like, where is the right number based on the applications? And we settled on 80, which is fantastic, a lot more than 50. And next year we plan on doing 100 and 100 and 100. So that come, 3 years out from now, we'll have 380-ish students in the program. When students graduate out, of course, new ones come in. So the longer-term plan over the next 4 or 5 years is to have around 400 students in the program.
So I've got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Conversations That Matter is brought to you by Odlum Brown, a client-focused investment firm that starts client relationships with straightforward conversations focused on you, your aspirations, and your investment priorities. Odlum Brown has been a supporter of Conversations That Matter from the day we started this show. Their only condition was that we provide a non-biased conversation with people from all sides of all sorts of issues. And of course, we couldn't produce this show without the support of Oh Boy Productions. If you're looking to produce a show like this one, I suggest you reach out to Oh Boy. They can help you produce it, and they can help you build your audience. And we also need your support. I ask you to please pledge $1 per show by going to conversationsthatmatter.tv/donate, because those dollars add up and play an important role in helping us produce this show. Now, back to the show. Now, the way that I read the award is that if you're going into a post-secondary institution like a university and you're going into a bachelor degree program, you're eligible for up to $10,000 a year for a four-year program. Is that right?
Correct.
That's an extraordinary amount of money over time.
Yes, it really is. It's to take, again, these students who in many cases they're working one and two jobs to support their families, and the thought of them going to school in many cases, the financial burden and the student debt and the likes, by investing this amount, and there's a lot more to the program which we'll talk about, but investing that amount, it takes so much stress away and it creates opportunities that might not otherwise exist. And we'll review that number as the years go by. It's a number we think works, but does it need to be a little more? Again, the people we're targeting come from, in many cases, seriously disadvantaged backgrounds. So it's $10,000 for university and $7,500 per year for college.
Right. So if you're at BCIT or Langara, maybe, or so on, it'd be $7,500. And that's for a two-year program.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. But we foresee in most cases, or in many cases, the students going to college for 2 years will then transfer to one of the universities, and in that case, it will go up to the $10,000 or whatever the amount is at that time.
And so, you talk about families coming from challenging, or students coming from challenging family situations, financially primarily. What exactly is the criteria for somebody to become eligible so that they can go through that application process?
Absolutely. So that's the big one. Well, that's the starting one. There are many aspects to the process we go through. We have an incredible selection committee and an advisory panel, like some amazing people. But one of the first ones is adversity, financial, and other sort of adversity that may relate to financial, but family circumstance, family illness, things that would act as a bit of a barrier to someone who doesn't have the same maybe opportunities that other students have. They need to have academic readiness. We're not looking for the straight A students who, I think there's a market already for them. These are, some of them are straight A students, but others that maybe B plus, A minus students, that if they had the same tutors and the other sort of support others have, they would be A students. Because academic readiness, we want to ensure that we're choosing students who have the possibility for success, the determination, the grit, the drive, those who also, who we see being those who would be giving back to this organization down the road. So they're coming in, having support, but they'll come back as mentors to the younger students in future years. So there's a culmination of those things.
So one of the other things that I noted in your literature is that you're looking for a resilience or a resiliency in the applicant. Why do you believe that's so important? And I'll agree with you that it is, but from your perspective, what makes it so important?
Well, there's so much need out there. There's so many students who could theoretically qualify for this, and we can't, of course, provide support for everyone. So you have to look for these differentiating factors, and resiliency being a huge part of one, because I think it could act as a good predictor for long-term future success.
Another component... I know that I sound like I'm your greatest cheerleader here, but I couldn't help but read this and think, okay, this has been really well thought out, because you're saying, okay, I'm not just giving you money. I'm now inviting you into a community. Why is it important that we do that?
I think that's crucial. I think that aspect of it is equally as important as the financial, to be honest. And we've talked to a lot of people during the consulting process and consultative process, talking to other experts in Canada and the U.S. in this area. So it's not only just the financial support, it's mentorship, and we have a large mentorship program that we've started. We want to set these students up for success. So there's mentorship, we're going to help them get placed in summer jobs and positions with various companies. This is a long-term investment in their success, which is, if we just cut them a check, that's not going to necessarily get them to succeed. University is a big, in college, it's a big transition for a lot of students. In what we understand, certain students as well from the disadvantaged backgrounds, in many cases, may not feel that they're in the right place or they don't belong. We want to ensure that not only don't they feel like they belong, but they have the support system around them to give them that extra leg up and that further chance of success going forward.
Well, I think one of the other components is that when you come from an early stage in life where your family may not have access to a networked business community or so on, it's easy to get shut out of that. And there are tremendous benefits from my perspective of being able to learn how to interact in that environment and learn from the give and take of a community that supports one another.
Absolutely. And there's so many people, friends of mine, people connected to our company, people who have just learned about our program that are wanting to play the role of mentors, that they want to invest back in younger students who, again, facing challenges. We have employees in our company that emotionally have said to me, look, I really want to step up. I want to help. It gives them an opportunity to contribute back. And it's going to be really beneficial, I think, for both parties. It's a huge part of what we're trying to achieve.
So do you think that desire to give back is what motivates, then, like, as you say, the enthusiastic response that you've had from people who go, well, okay, count me in, I want to be a mentor?
Absolutely. I think that people all through society, there's so many people that want to give back in many different ways, but they don't know, necessarily how to do it. When something comes to them that resonates with them, yeah, boom, I'll sign up. But it's in it with people. I see it all across the friends of mine, people that I meet. I think people generally want to give back, but they need to see something that resonates with them or create an opportunity that otherwise wouldn't exist. So the response when we've asked people has been tremendous.
You know, it's a lovely thing to be able to say, yes, I've supported these people and so on. But there is a societal benefit from my perspective that if we can help somebody else realize their full potential, yes, they do well, but the collective good absolutely outweighs the direct advantage to that individual.
Right. And it's also the right thing to do. You think, look at the, without these sort of investments, the opportunities that the success people could otherwise have, they wouldn't have had maybe this success, and there's this lost human capital potential. We have that, and look what they can do. And when they're brought from a situation like a challenging one that the people were targeting, and they have that success, they are more likely, I think, to be giving back and contributing back to society as well. So I think that the impact of this can be exponential if we do it the right way. And so far, I think we have. But we're continuing to learn. We're going to adapt and be nimble and flexible along the way. But we've made the $10 million payment towards the $50 million pledge. The other 40 is scheduled to be provided over the next 2 or 3 years. However, we think that's going to be accelerated significantly, which I'm really excited about. But knock on wood, we'll know more.
So are you telling me that you've got other people who are saying, well, Ryan, let us help you and become a supporter of
actually,
this as well?
So no, yes and no. So that's actually happening. I'll talk about that in a second. But, we pledged the $50 million on my birthday. We put $10 million down, $40 million over the next 2 or 3 years. We're going to take that $40 and actually invest it into Luminaries much sooner than that. That's the way it's looking right now, which is great, because the earlier that money comes in, the more it can be invested, and the longer life Luminaries will have. I'm not a believer in this typical endowment model where you put $50 million in, you got inflation protection for this, that, the next thing. The number of dollars that are actually going to people who need it is so much lower. We're taking this and we're going to run it out over, say, a 25-year, 25, 30-year period, where it will go down to zero, but I've got it in my will to replenish it, and or if something happens to me, my kids or the company can then reinvest down the road. But the capital itself has got to go to work as well. You get this big tax deduction, and then you put the money in the foundation, you get this return. You know, society needs to do more with the capital and not instead of just tucking it away and investing. I don't like that model. I'm a bit impatient. I want to get things done. And so we're taking a little bit of an unconventional approach to it. But the impact, again, that's more students that are going to be affected sooner, and the societal benefit will happen that much sooner as well. Mm-hmm. To your other point, we, over time, we're hoping and expecting that if we have success with this, that others may want to support us as well. We're trying to lead by example. And if people see an organization that their work resonates with them, they may be wanting to give and contribute to us. We've already had a contribution of $2.5 million, which we didn't expect so soon. And that's allowed us to expand the program already.
So year one is underway. You've already awarded those first 80. And those were for students who were in the Greater Vancouver area. As we move into year number two, does the program then expand out and become provincial?
It's provincial, and that's going to lead to some additional challenges in terms of our whole selection process and interviews and things. We're going to have to navigate some of those, but we're excited to roll it out province-wide. I think of the number of applications we received this year when it was just in Metro Vancouver, and it wasn't as well known. I'm sure next year the application numbers is going to go through the roof. So we're going to have to, again, modify a little bit how we've done things. But we're excited to make it province-wide. And that's where it will stay. It won't be a national program. It's going to be for British Columbia only.
So how will students, teachers, counselors, parents find out about this and get their hands on the information that they need to be able to complete the application process?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Martina's done a great job of meeting with different school districts and counselors, and the word of mouth already has taken it to a certain level. Now we're going to have to reach out to counselors and principals and the like throughout BC. So that process has started, and they go to our website, and it's word travels pretty quickly. We've got a pretty good social media presence that's going to be continuing to grow. And I think just students talking, like the number of students from certain schools in Metro Vancouver that were selected, I'm sure all the students in grade 11, whatever, are talking about this now. So
what are the essential things that an applicant is required to put together in their application so that they can be considered to be eligible?
They write an essay, they provide their transcript, they do a video of themselves. I love watching the videos because some of them are so creative, and you just sort of get a bit of a sense of the personality and the creativity of some of these students. So the application process is fairly straightforward, but we're going to be modifying that a little bit from some of the things that we learned. But you're trying to get a pulse of them, get a sense, like what are they really driven? Is this going to take them from here and help them get to here? We're looking for sort of the ambitious, the tenacity, the resilience. And it's exciting. Having met the first cohort, I have to say when I walked in, we held an event at Science World, the emotional impact of that for the first 15 minutes, I was worried because I was going to have to give my remarks. I was afraid of keeping it together because students are coming up to me and talking to me, and I'm fighting back tears because this whole idea we've been thinking about for 2 or 3 years and having launched it and what have you, once you get to the actual faces and meeting the people, it's real at that point. It's not some theoretical exercise, and you can make all the announcements you want. You're going to be affecting the lives of these people, and here they are, and their families, and the parents. It was the most wonderful, joyous, one of the best days of my adult life, and I'm really excited for, if that's just a taste of what's to come.
I can only imagine. I was reading one of the, it's not a testimonial, but a note of thanks in some ways from one of the young students who their family fled from Syria.
Yes.
And came to Canada, couldn't speak English, but here was this young person who had this burning desire to become a doctor, and now, because of this, that dream is alive.
Absolutely. You know, hearing her speak, reading these stories, and again, reading the early applications in particular, when you know, this is some conceptual idea, we're going to create this luminary thing, you start reading the applications, and you're going, this is exactly why we're doing this program. When you read them, they're so moving. Her story, talk about compelling. She did not know English 4 years ago. Straight A student, proficient, like she's a superstar. But family, of course, Syrian refugees, they don't have the resources, and that would be a big burden for her to get to school. The perfect, one of the perfect candidates mm-hmm. for Luminary. So that it feels really good to know that we're not only doing the right thing, but this is an ingenious sort of creative new program that is going to impact the lives of so many going forward. We're really excited.
So let me go back to just a couple of the details about that need to be in the application. So you need to have your transcript and
the transcript. In some cases come in, but they provide their transcript. They write an essay. The students do a video and answer questions as to what challenges have they had. Why do they think they'd be worthy of being in this program, and how they would give back. What kind of Luminary could they be? What's their sense of community? Just whatever we can glean from this information to help us get to the next stage. And then when we start, there's a cutoff, and then we have an interview process as well. And mm-hmm. we've had an interview process where we get to meet the students as well.
I noted that there was a requirement to have a reference letter from somebody within the educational institution that actually knows you.
Yes.
And I saw that you even had guidelines for the person writing the reference letter saying, recognize that this is important. This is not something that you're just going to dash off.
Yes, I should have said that. The reference letter is very important. I mean, the reference letters carry a lot of weight. It's particularly, again, reading them. There's certain that are reference letters that can be a bit more general, but many are specific where you understand that whether it's the vice principal, the principal, the teacher, the counselor is advocating strongly for the student. It's like trying to almost shake us going, this candidate is so amazing. And you read this, okay, we've got to give this person a go. So,
do you know that Bill Clinton, when he applied to go to Georgetown University, was denied because he was a Southern Baptist and was a Catholic university? But it was because his principal intervened on his behalf and went back to the admissions board and said, look, you got to look at this kid, that they let him in. And so you can see the value of, this support from somebody who needs it. And he would have been probably a perfect applicant for Luminaries had it existed.
Absolutely. It changes the course of history. It's fantastic. And again, growing up where I did, I worked and went to school. Tuition was way less back then, but I never had anything to worry about in that regard. But others didn't. And just because you're born into a certain circumstance, that shouldn't set the trajectory of your life. And this is Canada. Social mobility is really important. That's one of the things that differentiates us from the U.S. is creating these opportunities and not having people stuck because they're born into a challenging circumstance. So it's...
Well, I'll wrap up on this thought because I looked it up from Aristotle, and he had said the failure of one person to realize their potential is a loss to all of society. And, we know that financial barriers stand in the way of so many people. So I applaud you for what you're doing. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. Thank you.